welcome to another exciting episode of Constitutionally Correct. I am your constitutional evangelist, Randy Stufflebeam, and today, to me, is one of the more exciting episodes that we'll be doing is because our guest today is Larry Pratt of the Gun Owners of America and of all of the gun and rifle groups out there. I think the Gun Owners of America is one of the best, and I think has done the best in developing the right stances on the issues. And so I'm really glad to have Larry Pratt here with me, and welcome to the show, Larry.
Randy, thanks so much. It's good to be with you.
Well, this isn't our first encounter, is it?
I think so. We've seen each other on Facebook for quite a while, but I believe this is the first time otherwise.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what I was referring to. We've got that little friendship and can see what is being said and produced out there. But today, you know, obviously, with your connection with the gun owners and stuff like that, we've got quite a fight and a battle in front of us.
Yeah, the shooting in Newtown produced a predictable response from those who have wanted to ban guns for all along. And it was an opportunity that they've seized upon. But frankly, I don't see that they're going to fare any better than they have in the past. There's going to be a lot of smoke. There's going to be a lot of hollering. But at the end, I think most Americans realize that you don't go after guns as a way of going after crime. That hasn't worked in places like Washington, D.C., where they've banned guns and became one of the murder capitals of the country. And I think a lot of Americans have gotten the message that gun control is not the same as crime control.
Man, that's true. And of course, I'm not sure which place is on the top anymore. I know they're competing for that onerous honor of being the top capital crime of the country. But I think Chicago's certainly up there competing. And, of course, it's got one of the most stringent gun controls in the country as well. And, of course, their crime rate is skyrocketed.
Yeah, I think Chicago probably is in the lead. And it's a real credit to the Democrats and the Rahm Emanuel and the Barack Obama crowd that have run that poor city for so long. It's been just a socialist mecca since well before the Second World War, and they have completely dominated the city and its politics. It's corrupt, but then I already said it was socialist. And it is just a dismal place, and anybody that has to live within the confines of Cook County, my heart goes out to them.
Fortunately, being from Illinois here and living in, actually I live 20 minutes east of St. Louis, but fortunately everything south of I-80 is considered southern Illinois to those folks, and you know, quite frankly, I'm happy to have that consideration. But go ahead.
I was reflecting a day or two ago with another host that one of our members told me that years ago, before we had all these gun laws on the books that make it so difficult for people to get guns, the good guys anyway, not the bad guys, that it wasn't any big deal for kids to have guns, to even have them in school. And one of my one of our Gun Owners of America members had told me that as a lad, he had taken his bicycle from St. Louis, had ridden over the Mississippi on whatever the bridge is there, and there may be more than one, I don't know, and had gone over to Belleville, where he had seen an ad in the paper for a really cool deal on a .45, put his money down, he'd saved up for this thing, took the .45 back with him on the bicycle back into Missouri. And as far as I know, the gun still killed fewer people than Ted Kennedy's car.
You know, what's kind of funny is, you know, here in Illinois, you're not supposed to be able to transport a weapon unless it's neatly tucked into the trunk and the magazines pulled out and the bullets in another area and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
I wonder how that works.
That was a different day. And, you know, the thing that needs to be underscored, I think, is that crime was lower then than now with all of those incredibly stupid regulations and restrictions.
Well, before we get into too much depth and detail, a couple of things. One, I've been asked by numerous people to commend you on your conduct and your ability to do that interview with Piers Morgan. So, well done, Larry. If it was me, I'm not so sure I would have been able to maintain my composure quite as well as you did.
Well, I think most of the thanks needs to go to Piers Morgan. I'm very grateful to him for his membership recruitment. That was probably the time when we got more members in a short period of time than any other time. So Piers Morgan is somebody that we very much appreciate over here at Gun Owners of America. And just for the record, we're not supporting the petition to have him deported to England. Why would we want to get rid of one of our best assets?
Oh, man. Being here from the land of Lincoln, Illinois, I often have said, because I'm the national vice chairman for the Constitution Party and the second vice chairman here in the state of Illinois, and for a while I was the chairman, and I've often said, that the Democrats and the, by and large, the Republicans are the best people on our team. I mean, they're driving people to us.
Yeah. Well, that was certainly the case in this recent dust up, and we really kind of appreciate Piers Morgan. I think one of his other services is to remind us once again why we are no longer British.
Absolutely. Well, now, when you were on that interview, when you went to that interview, did you have any idea that he was going to treat you like that? Were you kind of prepared for that, or was that kind of just totally out of the blue?
Well, I don't watch much television. I had not seen Piers Morgan to my recollection. So this was a new experience for me, and here I am facing this guy who you can't see when you're at a television studio, because you're almost never actually in the same studio, even if they're in the same city, and I think he was in New York. So here's this guy with this British accent who I was expecting to be a typical Brit of, sort of a staid composure, somebody who, carry on now, And instead, I get this guy that would make a hot-blooded Latin blush. He really went off, and it was just amazing. But I rather enjoyed it at the time because I thought, this guy is digging his own grave. He's hurting himself the way he's behaving. And I, a day or two later, did the Alan Colmes show. Alan Colmes, of course, being the liberal part of the old Hannity-Colmes combo on Fox. And Colmes said, I agree with Piers Morgan's points, but I was embarrassed by his behavior.
Speaking about that, Alex Jones, a guy that I happen to like, was invited on the show and debate because Alex Jones is supporting that whole deportation petition. I think the opposite actually applied in that particular episode.
Well, I did see most of it, and I thought that Piers may have taken a lesson from his bad behavior with me, and he managed to keep his composure during the Alex Jones interview. So it at least tells me that people can control themselves when they want to.
And speaking about that particular episode, one of the things that was brought out, and Piers Morgan was trying to make a point, is the number, and I believe Piers Morgan said the number 35. Now, Alex Jones said a couple of hundred, whether it's 100, 200, or just 35. That's a really, really small number of violent gun deaths in England. But one of the
overall, last year there were 970 murders in England of whatever variety. I don't have a breakout on how many may have been guns, but I'm sure the person that was killed with a knife or a chair was thinking, "Oh, I'm so glad this is not a gun that's killing me."
You know, I was thinking the same thing. Because after watching that episode with him, I posted the link to it and made a couple of comments about, okay, so what about the little old lady that gets beat up with a tire iron because the mugger wants her purse or whatever, and she's totally unable to defend herself from this attack? Yeah, I'm glad this is a tire iron.
Yeah, the element of superior force is magnified in the absence of firearms, and somebody that has either a lethal instrument, a potentially lethal instrument, or just raw force, somebody who's greatly physically superior to the victim, is going to prevail. And the whole idea of a firearm is that it gives the victim a chance to even the playing field.
Well, exactly. I was going to say it's an equalizer. I mean, you know, so many times, especially in the, you know, of course, growing up, being bullied, you know, there was always the big kid, and typically he was being egged on by somebody else. And I'm thinking to myself, don't I have the right to equalize the situation here?
Well, it seems to me that when I'm being attacked, the idea of even a fair fight is not really in my interest. My right. interest is in stopping the attack. And if it means I can use a gun and it happens that the attacker is killed, well, that's the attacker's problem. If he hadn't attacked me, there never would have been a problem.
Well, you know, one of the statistics that I suspect would be very difficult to try to acquire in the first place, because I'm sure that they would be largely unreported, but how many attacks have been thwarted because somebody pulled the gun and said, look, you're not going to beat me up, you're not taking my stuff, just simply go away, and the attack never happens?
Some idea of that. The federal government compiled data based on surveys that were done nationally, and it's about 4,000 plus times a day that an American uses a gun to do just what you're talking about. And usually it's enough to either say I have a gun or to show that I have a gun. And once the attacker realizes that this may not end well for him, game over. It's that simple. And guns truly save lives.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the fact that there is a complete, not ignorance of, but an ignorance of, they totally ignore the idea or the fact that there are statistics that absolutely, unequivocally proves that they are wrong.
Well, I don't know that that many of them are susceptible to a factual argument. There's something, they have a dislike of the gun, and I think, as I've looked at it, it's somewhat rooted in a dislike of self-defense. I think what they're saying is, and I've heard some of them articulate it this way, is that the presence of a gun is just likely to escalate what otherwise might have been resolved in discussion. So the guy coming at me with a knife, I could have talked to had I not pulled a gun, is sort of what they're saying. And, you know, if they want to buy that, well, you know, fine. I can't protect everybody that's that silly. And if they don't mind having their ribs separated by an Aztec surgeon with no anesthesia, well, you know, fine. I think most normal people would rather put a bullet in the attacker if the attacker won't run away. And self-defense is bad. You even see in the area of foreign policy. In Benghazi, we actually withdrew our defense assets from our diplomatic building there in Benghazi because we didn't want to be provocative.
Right.
And it was, of course, just the opposite that happened. No defense meant an attack.
Right. We're at the end of our segment here. We'll continue that as soon as we get back, folks. Stay with us. Welcome back to our second segment of Constitutionally Correct. I'm interviewing Larry Pratt here of Gun Owners of America, and we're talking about the issue of gun control and the gun mentality, I guess. Some of the idea is, and you know, this is how do you even wrap your mind around the fact that it seems like so many Americans are so willing to be victims. I mean, they are so, I mean, it's like, I don't want to defend myself. It's okay if they beat me up, or I don't care if they kill me. I mean, there seems to be this kind of mentality. How do you wrap your mind around that seems to be a pervasive mentality?
Well, if they really believe that and want to act on the basis of it, you know, there's not too much I can do to help them unless I happen to be around with a gun when they're attacked. But I'm not going to let them impose that on me. And if they were to pass some kind of a gun ban, you're talking to one of the first lawbreakers. I will not turn in my guns.
Well, that's the one thing I did appreciate Alex Jones on Piers Morgan. You're not taking my guns. And I thought the best line of that whole thing that he said was, look, you redcoats tried to take our guns from us once before. It didn't work out for you so well. So why are you trying it again? And, you know, the real interesting thing about that, Larry, is the fact that the Brits had a far superior military force to anything we could reckon with. And yet we won. And I think one of the things that was pointed out were that I guess the Brits are so willing to accede to, laying their lives down to somebody else.
Well, that I think may be reflected in the way each people describe themselves. The Brits describe themselves as subjects to Her Majesty. We look at ourselves as citizens. The subject is the creature of the kingdom, whereas the citizen is the one who establishes the republic, the founder, the creator. And so the politicians work for us, and if there are any subjects in America, it's those who are working in government. They're subject to the people. And so,
very good point.
Pretty radically different approach to who's who.
Right. Well, I've got a good friend of mine who's called in, Chris, and I'll just let him know I'm about to open your line. But before I do, I want to go. The NRA made this huge, big announcement about their endeavors to do some training and all this other stuff. What's your take on all that?
Well, you're speaking of their response to the Newtown massacre?
Yes.
I was glad that they weren't at least talking about a support for gun-free zones, which years ago was their position. They had actually supported gun-free school zones. But frankly, the idea that you would have just one armed and uniformed person in a say a school, which is really what we're talking about mostly at the moment, I think is, first of all, unrealistic because it's very expensive. We're talking about somebody that's probably going to get paid, give or take, $55,000 a year times however many schools we have in the country. That's a lot of money. And the country right now has less than $0. We're broke.
Yeah.
So I don't see something like that being realistic from a financial point of view. Secondly, I don't think it's the best idea in terms of having a uniformed officer at a school, and that supposedly is the extent of who has a gun, means that if somebody's going to try to do another Newtown, they look for the officer, kill him, and then it's the same game as Newtown all over again. You've gotten rid of that one person that might have been able to deal with you that way. Whereas if, in fact, it were the Gun Owners of America proposal, then you would run the risk that maybe the principal, maybe the janitor, maybe two or three of the teachers had concealed carry permits, and would be able to produce a gun and down you, and you don't know which one of them it might be. That level of uncertainty would probably mean that such an attack would almost never happen.
Well, then I take it to you, you're probably real familiar with the school district down in Holder, Texas.
Gentleman, Twait, I think is his last name, has been encouraging teachers since 2007 to get a concealed carry permit because they would be welcome at the school with their gun once they have that permit. This is something that the law, the national ban actually permits, as if the state has no opposition to that, then when a principal has approved of such a policy, then one is perfectly legal in carrying a concealed firearm on a school ground. And so almost immediately after that law was proposed, this principal began figuring out what he could do to undo the damage brought about by the law. The damage, I would say, is something that we've seen most recently in Newtown, but frankly, for the last 20 years, we've been subjected to mass murders, almost all of which have been in gun-free zones. And so this principal knew that could happen and wasn't going to have anything to do with it.
Yeah, I agree. Well, Chris Shipler, who's online with us, I think wants to contribute to the conversation or ask a question. Go ahead, Chris.
Sorry, I'm typing away here. It is a pleasure to speak with you, and I did see your Pierce Morgan interview, and I was trying to get to the screen at him, but it didn't work. one of the things, I'm on my fifth program right now. I have another blog radio show, and we've been covering, my son is a combat vet, and he's also concealed carry, doing advanced training, will become a trainer, so we've been doing a tremendous amount of research and work. One of the things that I can't seem to find anybody willing to talk about is the fact that prisons, overcrowded prisons and budgets and closures of prisons are dumping hardened criminals back on our streets. And one of the things that we've been trying to do is profile, not trying, but doing, is profiling, legal citizens protecting themselves with guns. We do two or three of them a night on our shows to show people that this is real. What about, and the increase in home invasion? It is amazing how many stories I look at are home invasions, which means this new modern evil, criminal that we have today has no fear, and they don't care if you're home or not. And it just seems like that is not getting out there in the message. And I'm wondering if you have some input on that. And then the second part of the question is, where do I get my hands on that 4,000 a day stat? Because I'm working off of John Lott's figures, which are late 90s. And I'd sure like some updated information in my arguments on our show.
If you go to gunowners.org, we have a fact sheet. In fact, I believe it's a fact sheet section, and there's one that we've kind of kept updating. It may actually have a date on it, and I'll go there while we're talking. But it's a compilation of some 20 pages of just tons and tons of information, all very heavily documented. It's called the Gun Control Fact Sheet. It's at the top of the page when you go to gunowners.org and then select fact sheets. And then it's got annual updates of various kinds, maybe answering something from the Violence Policy Center or Bloomberg and his tour of what we call Tour of Lies. But the big mama is the gun control fact sheet that our foundation has put together. So that's there as a readily available resource. It's dated in 2008, but I know that some of the guys keep updating it when something significant comes up. So you're pretty confident that whatever is there is likely to be the most recent information that's available. And now, I'm sorry, what was the other question you
okay.
had?
Okay, well, the other question is, I don't hear people talking about this. I have been, because it's been a study of mine that goes beyond the current situation, but that is the violent criminals and hardened criminals that are being let out on the streets because our prisons are overcrowded, and they're being forced to let people go. And, you know, because of budget issues, there's also multiple prisons being shut down. And we have an increase in home invasions that is not being registered or logged very well because of, you know, every state has a different way of looking at, you know, burglary. And there is a definite difference between a home invasion and a burglary because now you have victims at home and these criminals don't care. What's your take on that? Because that's a huge part of the argument of our rights to carry, have a weapon and protect ourselves. Because cops can't be in every home in this country.
Any increase in home invasions of occupied homes would likely be in areas like the District of Columbia, Chicago, where it's not likely that somebody is going to have a gun in the house. There's been a sharp difference between the United States home invasion statistics and those of England. In England, some 65% of the home invasions involve occupied homes, whereas in the United States, at least until recently, it's been under 15%. Criminals definitely would appear to be making a sincere effort to find a home that's not occupied for them to invade because of the risk of getting shot in the United States if somebody's home, because there'd probably be a 50-50 chance that the homeowner has a gun. Those are not real good odds for conducting a criminal enterprise.
Well, we must have some stupid criminals because almost all the cases that we're profiling on our show are home invasions with people walking in on a homeowner with a gun.
Well,
I mean, we must be breeding a whole new level of criminal here.
That is something that we hadn't been brought to our attention, and if that is indeed occurring, then it argues all the more for people to have guns and to have them not just nicely tucked away at home, but to have them readily available.
Accessible.
Another entirely bit of a discussion because I forget who it was, but, you know, yeah, okay, I agree with your right to keep and bear arms, but all of your weapons should be locked up. Okay, what good is that going to be? Except for maybe the fact I might want to go out hunting and do a little sportsmanship. Yeah, whatever, you know. I'm talking about keeping a loaded, ready-to-fire weapon on safe, sitting right next to my bed if I want to protect myself in any sort of real fashion.
The founders seemed to think was a legitimate role of the government in the area of firearms was to require, to actually have laws requiring men to have military-type firearms so that if they were called up for militia duty, they would have something to bring with them. So that seemed to be the founders' idea of gun control, certainly rather different from what we have now.
Oh, absolutely. And we're getting close to the end, and I'll wrap up this segment with the idea that, you know, when the Second Amendment was created, it was a given that everyone had guns. There was no local grocery store where you could go down and get yourself a nice ham or a nice turkey or a nice side of beef or something. You went out there, you killed it, you slaughtered it yourself. It was a given that everyone had a gun. They had to go out and shoot their own food. And so when they made this Second Amendment, it had nothing to do with the idea of sportsmanship or hunting or anything else. It was a way of life. It was a given that everyone already had weapons. But the fact was that there was another idea that was behind that, and that's what we'll get to in this third segment. So stay with us, folks. Welcome back to our third and final segment, and time is flying by. Larry, one of the things that I think I've noted here, I mean, especially with the fact that so many gun stores don't have guns in their stores now or ammunition because they've completely sold out. So does this kind of look like one of those situations where they jumped a little too hard and too fast, and it's actually going to bite them in the butt with this issue this time?
Well, it's been said that pigs fly, but I've never seen it. But apparently guns are flying. They're flying off shelves, and most of them have already flown. So, it's very difficult to find many kinds of firearms that are being sought. I imagine there are some still available, but they're kind of down on the wish list. Even before this recent buying frenzy, there were gun stores I've been in that had pictures of the president up on the wall, which might be a little surprising because he's not really a friend of gun owners. But it had a caption which explained why they had his picture up, and it was Salesman of the Year. And he's really Salesman of the Year now, because when he came out after Newtown saying that he was going to push gun control, that just absolutely lit the fuse, and the buying frenzy is on. I thought it was pretty intense when he got elected, when he got reelected, but it's taken up off to new highs even from there. So I don't think the manufacturers are going to be able to catch up for quite some time. Forget about it.
Do you think that it is predominantly those who already own firearms and they're just trying to increase their arsenal, or do you think the biggest bulk of this buying frenzy has come from new gun owners who have said, oh, wait a minute, they're not doing it. I haven't owned a firearm yet, but if they're getting this crazy, I'm going out to get mine now.
Well, I don't really know that anybody knows that. I'm certain that there would be people that have already bought a gun that are buying another one because they've already done it. They're used to that. It's not a big deal for them to go buy a gun. But I do know, and I've talked to people who were doing it in fact, even at the time of the impending first election of the president, people were calling us and asking, what kind of firearm should I buy? What's a good store to go to? So that was going on a long time ago, and I can only imagine. So, yeah, there's got to be some new people there. There's no question that Obama has made believers out of people that may have been okay with gun ownership, but just never got around to buying a gun. Well, they've made that decision now.
You know, what's interesting is, and I wanted to kind of go to the Second Amendment, because we are on a show called Constitutionally Correct, and I really want to get from your perspective, a constitutional perspective of what the Second Amendment really is all about.
Well, the Second Amendment is a political statement, a political tool aimed at controlling the government. It's not about anybody's right to hunt, which I think is very likely to be found in the unenumerated rights of the Ninth Amendment that are protected there. It's not about self-defense, I think ditto, probably there in the Ninth Amendment. It's about making sure that if the government becomes tyrannical, the people have a way of telling the government, enough, get back in your box, do what you're supposed to, work within the Constitution. So that's the Second Amendment. It's just a tool that was provided for something that was viewed as all too likely to happen. It happened to the founders. The government of the day had become tyrannical, and had it not been for their ability to resort to arms, we'd all be speaking with another accent.
That's true. And, you know, the Second Amendment begins with a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. And I've heard the argument that the militia basically is the military, and of course that's what the founding fathers had said. And of course, if people would actually read the Constitution and take a look at Article 1, Section 8, nearly half of those clauses in there deals with our federal government's specific duties and mandated requirements in relation to the militia. But I've heard the argument. People say, well, you know what? Guns are for the militia. The Second Amendment says it is the militia. What the Illinois State Constitution says in Article 12, Section 1, which is the membership of the militia for the state of Illinois, that gives the definition of who the militia is. So when those people who say the guns are just for the militia, I will say a happy, hearty amen, because guess who the membership of the militia is here in the state of Illinois?
It's all able-bodied persons. So, in fact, it doesn't even use the preface able-bodied. It's just all persons. So, clearly, an armed populace is the intent of the Second Amendment, your Second Amendment-type language in Illinois, and many other states have the same kind of language.
Absolutely. And so, you know, and the Second Amendment already makes a definition, because not only does it say a well-regulated militia, in the next, after the little comma there, it says the right of the people. So it makes the automatic connection within the Second Amendment itself to say the people are the militia. And
right.
So, of course, the clarification within the state of Illinois. Of course, we have one of the most horrendous, quote-unquote, right to bear arms here in Illinois for our Constitution, which says subject to the police power. Well, you know, as soon as you define for me who the legitimate police power is, you know, people should be absolutely scared. And in fact, what's real interesting here in Illinois is the fact that just a few weeks ago, maybe a month, maybe out the outside, 2 months, the Illinois Supreme Court said that Illinois had 6 months to get their legislation to reflect that they have the right to concealed carry. Illinois is one of the last, if it's not the last, states to permit concealed carry within its borders. And the Supreme Court says you've got to cut that out and make your legislation appropriate, because it says that is an unconstitutional position. But yet we've got the legislators right now at work trying to create a assault weapons ban here in Illinois, and which is really, I mean, they're trying to really just eliminate it. And of course, as you know, Chicago already has no guns allowed in the city.
And they've got a murder rate to tell us that maybe that's not such a good idea. What may have appeared sensible at the time as a way of controlling crime, turns out it doesn't. Just does not, and everywhere gun bans have been tried, crime is just much, much worse than it would have normally been. And Chicago is very much bearing that out. And I don't think they're that much concerned about their crime rate. I think what they want is a disarmed citizenry.
Right.
And if it means a high murder rate has to be a price to pay, well, they'd rather that than have the idea that the citizenry might get so mad at them that they would do in Athens, Tennessee. There's a movie called Battle of Athens, and the last 20 minutes or so is just terrific. It's a nice enough movie all through, but toward the end, these returning veterans from World War II, this is probably the scene is about the time it was made in 1947 or something like that, find that their town and county has been taken over by a bunch of corruptocrats, kind of like Chicago, not quite as rural or as urban. And after seeing that an election had clearly been stolen, kind of like Chicago, they formed a militia, kind of a pickup, ad hoc sort of thing, and marched into town. The bad boys with the corrupt cops took the ballot boxes of the election they were in the process of stealing into the jail and were prepared to make a last stand, and there was a brief firefight. I mean, this is historical. It's in a movie, and so that's all true, but the movie is based on what actually happened in Athens, Tennessee, around 1947. And ultimately, the corruptocrats inside the municipal facility realized they weren't going to be able to hold out, and they eventually came out with their hands up, and the ballot boxes were removed from their possession. And wouldn't you know, the outcome of the election was completely different from what had been declared.
Yeah. Well, you know what's real interesting? Another perspective about this. I'm a retired Marine, spent 22 years in the Marine Corps, deployed to the east, the Orient, over three times. And one of the operations that I was a part of was Operation Bear Hunt, and that is an annual operation that is done by coalition forces between the American forces and the Korean forces. Specifically, I worked with the ROC Marines, the Republic of Korea Marines, and we always did so just a little south of the DMZ, the demilitarized zone. And you know what's interesting is, why did we do that operation just a few miles south of the North Korean border?
Evidently, you wanted them to see what you were doing.
It was a show of force. We wanted to show them how strong we really are, so that they don't one day wake up and say, hey, let's go attack somebody. No,
yep.
we shove it in their face. We say, look, if you're ever going to do this, I'm going to wake up one day and attack somebody. Here's what you're going to be reckoning with. It is a deterrent. It is used as a deterrent, a show of force. And yet we have an American government that does this in the face of tremendous enemies that would like to kill us, and yet they say we Americans don't have that same right.
Yeah, go figure. It's pretty perverse, but actually I think we are seeing the gradual dominance of the no self-defense mentality. Not only does the president say he wants to pursue a rigid gun control agenda, but I mentioned earlier he withdrew our defense assets in Benghazi many weeks before it was attacked. Gee, what a surprise.
Yeah.
You're in a hotbed of an area where a lot of people hate your guts, the radical Muslims there in that part of Libya, and you take away your ability to defend your United States building, and when it gets attacked, you're surprised. It seems to me that there ought to be criminal penalties attached because they left people there to die. Not only
Absolutely.
Provoking the attack, but once it began, from everything that I've been able to read, we let them die. Now, how
Absolutely.
Hostile to self-defense can you be?
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been told I don't have a heart. Well, that may be true. I don't have a heart. But let me tell you, they don't have a freaking brain either. So we're in the last minute of our conversation. What would you like to leave us with, Larry?
Well, I encourage people to go to gunowners.org, get on our email alert list. That will keep you up to date with what's happening on Second Amendment issues in the Congress. That's at gunowners.org. And when you get an alert from us, it will have built into it an email that can be fired off to your appropriate member of Congress. And that's become a very important lobbying tool to make it so that people in a district, in a state, are able to participate actively in the political process. That is so helpful in keeping members of Congress under control.
Yeah. I've got another solution. I say let's get some real men and women elected that will uphold our gun rights, and we don't have to
Absolutely.
Keep trying to hold everybody else's feet to the fire.
Absolutely.
Well, Larry, that's all the time we got for this episode. I really appreciate you being here. Thank you for taking your time to speak with us, and I hope we can have another conversation here real shortly, because I think there's quite a few things we need to talk about yet.
Well, thank you for having me. Appreciate being with you.
Well, God bless, and let's go forth and protect ourselves, our family, and these United States of America. Stay with us, folks, for another exciting episode of Constitutionally Correct.